Welcome to the WWE Podcast, a weekly show dedicated to discussing the current pro wrestling product through all of the good.
AJ Styles is the WWE World Champion!
And the bad.
Number 30. The big dog is gonna hunt!
The WWE Podcast reviews every Raw, SmackDown Live, and WWE pay-per-view event, giving an unfiltered opinion, even sharing some favorite wrestling memories.
Oh, Stone Cold Steve Austin, thought he'd come out here and give you a little present right from the bottom of my heart.
Oh! Oh, my God! Oh, my God! Oh, this can't stop in the stutter! This...
And now, here's your host, the man who doesn't play a bad guy on TV and loves sharing his passion for a Roman Reigns heel turn, Matt Corsell.
Hey guys, and welcome to the WWE Podcast. Thank you for joining me on this Friday. A very good Friday to everybody out there, and hopefully you have some fun plans this weekend, the very first official weekend of summer. And summer doesn't last too long if you're in the northern states. You guys know I'm in New York. And I shouldn't say New York, because when you say New York, everybody automatically thinks the city. And when you say the city, while there's multiple cities, New York City is the one that everybody just kind of assumes you're from. And that is not the case. I'm upstate. And by upstate, I don't mean Suffolk County, okay? And that's, you know, like 40 minutes outside the city. Upstate is towards the capital. So up here, I'll tell you, we don't get a lot of this weather. And when we get it, you know, it's quick. And before you know it, leaves are going to start changing. We're going to be right back into fall, right back into football season. For many of you out there, I am a fantasy football fanatic. After the last couple of years of playing on DraftKings and FanDuel and doing my own league and things like that, I'm looking forward to this year for sure. So, but this isn't about fantasy football. This isn't about baseball. Although, if you're a Yankee fan, tough times, tough times. Or if you're a Mets fan, I shouldn't complain. But this isn't about baseball. This is about the most important sport that is ever graced your television screen. That is professional wrestling. Otherwise, you wouldn't be listening to this, right? It's named the WWE Podcast, formerly Matt's Madness, which, by the way, guys, you can visit me at WWEpodcast.com in the next 1 to 2 days. That website will be going live, totally new look, feel, totally modernized for 2017. It looked like, you know, it was prior. It looked kind of like it was done by a freshman in high school that is moderately proficient at designing web pages. So this is no longer 1999 on my web page. We have updated it to 2017. As I said, probably in the next day or so. I'm going to be gone for the weekend, going away for just a couple of days and getting away. And so if you guys are doing the same, hope you have a good time. And let's get to why the hell you're listening to this podcast, right? You are listening because you want to hear about Money in the Bank. You want to hear about Raw, SmackDown Live. You want to hear about all of that. And I'm going to get to it right now. Why wait? All right, let's get into Money in the Bank. We're going to go in sequential order. And by the way, guys, follow me on Twitter at the WWE Podcast if you'd like to get in touch with the show. You can even submit a form to be on the show. If you are a rabid WWE fan, you can do that on my website at WWEpodcast.com. All of that information's right there. And there's a link right at the top here on the podcast. I'd love to maybe get you on the show. All right, let's get into Money in the Bank. And this was a show that had a very, very controversial ending to the very first Money in the Bank ladder match for the women. I'm going to get to that, you know what, right now. Let's talk about that right now, because that's at the forefront of everybody's mind. At least that's one of the A topics that is at least in the first couple of talking points that most fans want to dive into. So let's get into it. You know, the match itself was okay. I thought it never really got going. I feel like there was another gear that the women could have really taken it to, and they started to get there, but before they could, James Ellsworth climbs the ladder. Well, tips over the ladder on Becky Lynch, grabs a Money in the Bank briefcase, and then drops it down to Carmella. And as JBL said, no rule was broken because how can you break a rule that doesn't exist? So, good point. I mean, I was thinking the same thing, that if there's no rules, the first woman to just get the briefcase wins. It's kind of like, you know, hey, I'm sorry, that sucks, but I can't do anything about it. And that's the way I was going. And so, controversial ending. I know many people were angry because of all of this work that WWE has done to try to educate the fans that we are taking women's wrestling seriously. We rebranded them from divas to women, and we had the very first Hell in a Cell match, cage match, now Money in the Bank ladder match. We've had women main event pay-per-views, main events Raws and SmackDowns. I think really the only thing left to main event is a major pay-per-view and ultimately WrestleMania, which I could see happening in the next 5 years or so. But that is what WWE has educated the audience, that we are taking women's wrestling seriously. And then this happens. And WWE, and I'm going to get to SmackDown Live, and I'll go through SmackDown Live after this, just because we're on the same track here. Instead of going to a different world of Raw, we're going to go from Money in the Bank to SmackDown. So we'll get to that in a moment. But I know that a little bit of kind of diving into SmackDown, that they are redoing. They're doing a redo for the Money in the Bank ladder match next week on SmackDown Live. And while I don't know if this was WWE's plan all along, or if it's the backlash of this company treating or presenting the women as they did Sunday with James Ellsworth, a man having to help a woman, ruining the very first match, the booking might have gotten some backlash, or maybe this was their booking all along and their plan all along. And just a side note too, and I'll probably touch on this again, but when all of the women and the women's gripe on SmackDown Live, they were kind of coming together with a common enemy of James Ellsworth and Carmella stealing the briefcase, not earning it, talking about they were there to make history. And wait a minute. What about winning? Why the hell is it always about making history? You'll make history by having the match. You should be concerned with winning. You need to be concerned with winning the damn match. I understand it's historic. I understand it's a milestone in the women's division, in women's wrestling overall. I understand. I get it. Congrats. I'm all for it. But don't tell me you're there to make history. What about winning? Sasha and Charlotte were guilty of this all last year as they had firsts in Hell in a Cell and so forth. And Iron Woman matches and all that last year. And Sasha was more concerned about making history rather than winning the freaking match. It's just so corporate when they say that. It's so contrived, and I know they're going to make history. But wait, you'll make history by having the match. That will speak for itself. You don't need to tell me it's going to make history. As a competitor and as a character I'm supposed to get behind, you should be telling me you want to win the freaking match. Don't tell me you want to make history. It's got 2017 crap all over it. Like, everybody's PC and everybody's so concerned and sensitive about what everyone else is thinking and saying and doing and all of that garbage. Just win the freaking match. That will make history. Okay, I'm getting on a tangent that I probably shouldn't get on, but that's how I feel about it. Usos versus The New Day for the Tag Team Championship. The winners were The New Day. I called it. I think most people did, and it's the right way to go. They won by DQ, or a countout it was, but the Usos should keep the belts. It's not time for New Day to gain those championship back, the Tag Team Championships back. We saw that for how many days? On Monday Night Raw. It is Usos' time. They're the ones that need the belts right now, and they are doing a very good job of finally gaining some traction with their characters and their mic work. No need. no need anytime soon for the New Day or anybody else to take the belts from the Usos. This a good logic to get heat on the Usos, too, by intentionally getting counted out. The match was really good, actually, and a lot of convincing near falls. I enjoyed the match overall. So the effort was there. The finish was perfect. I really thought this benefited everyone in the match. It put heat on the heels. It made New Day look strong by, you know, being too much for the Usos to handle. The performance in the ring was good. Everybody seemed to be on their game. A very solidly booked match from top to bottom. Naomi versus Lana for the Women's Championship. Well, the winner was Naomi. But she kicks out of the rear view, which was a finisher, and the announcers no-sell it. Yeah, I understand that it's just Naomi's ass bouncing into her opponent's face or chest or whatever. I get it. Cleverly named rear view. But nonetheless, it is sold and billed as a finisher, and the announcers no-sell it. I think that's just a company-wide problem. But Carmella comes out and teases cashing in, waiting for the match to continue, but Lana ends up tapping out, and Lana saved. Her character is saved a bit from the Carmella interference. Not a bad debut by Lana, and I think this is more than what most people expected. I was concerned it was going to be a disaster from an in-ring perspective, and it wasn't a disaster. It was okay, and I think that okay is as much as we could have expected from Lana. I don't think she was sharp. There were some slightly awkward moments with her punches and things, but I think overall she did okay, and okay is good, if that makes sense. And obviously she gets a rematch next week. We'll talk about that. So good booking, not time for Lana. I think more of the intrigue on this match, which to me the Women's Championship should have never been put up anyway, but this was more about how is Lana going to do inside the ring? And we got the answer. Okay, that's the answer. Fashion Vice, they end up using a VHS dial-up, a lot of retro cell phones. Property of Paul E. was pretty funny on the cell phone. I enjoyed it overall. It was good. You know, a lot of these, some are hits, some are miss, but it, right now, whether they're good or bad, it's still giving the Fashion Police, or really Breezango is their official name, an identity. And they're a babyface team. The crowd is behind them. Are they hot? No. But think about where they were. A team that, to me, was almost at the level of the Ascension has really risen up to mid to upper card a type of a tag team in SmackDown Live's environment. So I enjoyed it. You know, some of those, I said, some of these are bad. Some of these are good. Some of them, a couple of them have been really funny. So nonetheless, I would continue with it. I would. And it's really these backstage vignettes and skits, if they're done correctly and done well, it can really help them get them where they want to be. And at least, as I said, it's given them an identity. All right, Mike and Maria Kanellis debut. Maria says the First Lady is back in WWE, and for the last 7 years, she has been searching for the perfect partner, and that they are here to educate everyone on the power of love. So if you guys have watched TNA, you know this couple, and I guess here's the thing. I don't understand why it's supposed to put heat on Mike for taking Maria's last name. I don't get it. Am I just being stupid? I don't know. I don't understand how that's supposed to put heat on Mike. I don't understand. But Maria Kanellis at least is no longer standing there in a mini skirt as the camera pans to her ass, and she's just a piece of eye candy for WWE. This is a new world of women's wrestling, and that I think will absolutely benefit Maria. So, but again, I don't understand how that's supposed to put heat on her husband for taking her last name. So what? I don't care. That doesn't bother me. Like, do whatever you want, you know? I don't know. Anyway, Jinder Mahal versus Randy Orton for the WWE Championship. The winner here, obviously, was Jinder, but legends were sitting at ringside. It's a nice touch because it made it feel more important with all of those legendary eyeballs with Sergeant Slaughter, Ric Flair, obviously, you had Randy's dad there, so I would think, you know, Jinder probably wanted to have the performance of his lifetime with all those legends sitting at ringside. You know, he goes from jobber to main eventing a pay-per-view with the legends in front row. I mean, boy, talk about a jetpack on your back. A nice psychology here with Jinder picking a body part of Orton, which was his left leg, and really focusing on it. That's just, it's wrestling 101. It's a formula that I don't think gets old. Yes, there are some down spots and boring spots, and you may have a time where you're yawning or just going, come on, pick up the pace. But you can't have a match go 400 miles an hour the entire time. Going at a pace that the crowd can digest and allow them to process what is going on inside the ring is something that I think is much more effective than just doing high spot, high spot, high spot, power move, kick out, power move. You need some kind of buildup and stepping stones to get to those finishing maneuvers and those bigger moves that have more impact if it's done later in the match. So I liked it. It makes sense for a heel to continue to focus on a body part, and that's what Jinder did. It's just heel psychology, heel wrestling 101. I liked it. So we had the Singh brothers ejected after putting Jinder's leg on the rope following an RKO. They threatened Bob Orton, and Randy makes the save, absolutely destroying them. The same finish with Jinder as their previous match, and Jinder takes advantage with the Colossus, and the Colossus has not been kicked out of. Bravo. I like that. It establishes the move as devastating and as a real deal finish. While it's just kind of a pump handle, not a pump handle slam, but a full Nelson slam, so what? They named it the Colossus. Is it spelled C-O-L-L-A-S? I don't know how to spell Colossus. I should probably just look the damn thing up, but nonetheless, I enjoyed it. I think, yes, it's the same finish, but it puts more heat on Jinder. I like it, so here we go. Let's talk quickly about Breezango versus The Ascension. I have nothing to say other than Breezango won quick, in fairly quick fashion. No pun intended. All right, so let's get to the Money Bank ladder match of AJ, Kevin Owens, Shinsuke, Ziggler, Zayn, and Corbin. And Corbin attacks Shinsuke during his entrance. Wow, is that a good way to piss off the crowd or what? Man, when they want to participate in that awesome entrance and they don't get to do it, that puts a lot of heat on Corbin. I like it, and it keeps Shinsuke special when he does compete and keeps him away from having to compete with AJ, at least until, obviously, the end of the match, what we saw. And, you know, Shinsuke eventually makes his way back, showing fire, showing that he's a guy that is not going to quit. And so when Corbin's about to climb, Shinsuke shows up. And, by the way, when Corbin, was about to climb up the ladder and he sees Shinsuke making his way down, he could have had time to go on up and grab the briefcase. Logic is just thrown out the damn window with these matches. I mean, suddenly everybody can't climb. They can jump up to the top rope and do a 450 splash in the blink of an eye, but man, when that comes to that ladder, they just can't. They just forget how to put one leg in front of the other, realizing how big of an opportunity is at the top of the ladder. They just it's a little bit of a take me out of the moment type of deal, but it was a cool stare down too, by the way, between AJ and Shinsuke. Really nice here. It ends with both men on the ladder, only to be knocked off by Baron Corbin, who wins the briefcase. Really big heel night here. So I liked it. I know that they're saving AJ Shinsuke for either SummerSlam or WrestleMania. To me, that's the only places you do it. And why Brock and Samoa Joe was on Great Balls of Fire. I wish it was on a pay-per-view that actually had some name power. I understand that it's more about the matches than the name of the pay-per-view, but my God, who came up with this nonsense? It almost kind of dumbs down how important Joe and Lesnar is, but we'll get to that. And by the way, wish AJ and Shinsuke, when they stared at each other in the ladder, I wish that they had still only stared at each other. No physicality, just had a standoff and maybe had somebody else, Kevin Owens, come in and, interrupt the moment, but have the moment happen, but not actually have these two exchange any physicality just yet. To me, that would have been better booking, foreshadowing what could happen down the road instead of giving away any kind of physicality between the two. I think that should have been saved. I think they still did a little too much with AJ and Shinsuke, but nonetheless, it was what it was. I'm cool with it. Baron Corbin wins the briefcase, and we have a heel win the Money in the Bank, which Money in the Bank is tailor-made for a heel persona because you can take advantage of a downed champion and at his weakest state take the belt. So that's, I mean, really, it is tailor-made for a heel. So all right, let's get to SmackDown Live, because SmackDown Live, I think, was a loaded show. I really thought it was one of those shows that flew by. You know, when it's only 2 hours, or if you watch Hulu Plus, it's an hour and a half. It was one of those shows that seemed to go much quicker than others. We have Miz TV with Maryse at the beginning. Miz apologizes to his wife for destroying the clock and knocking her off the apron. Miz delivers a pretty heartfelt apology. And as Maryse is about to accept his apology, Ambrose interrupts, which causes champagne to be spilled on Maryse. And Miz accidentally gets knocked into the clock. He then gets clotheslined out of the ring, and then the Bears attack Ambrose, who are revealed to be Axel and Dallas. So, good. I'm fine with it. Miz hits the skull-crushing finale on Ambrose, and the Miz stands tall after a segment? I don't know, what's going on here? Usually he gets... I can't tell you. How many times over the last 5 to 6 weeks has the Miz been left laying after dirty deeds for a segment? I mean, and by when is Miz Ambrose ever going to end, by the way? Like, it's not, it's running on fumes. I think this has to be their final match at the next pay-per-view. It just has to be, which is Battleground for SmackDown. Yes, folks, we have two more pay-per-views and then SummerSlam. It just doesn't end. So Ambrose, to me, was kind of the heel here. I mean, if you think about it logically, you know, Miz was delivering a very heartfelt apology to Maryse. And Ambrose is responsible for a lot of what's going on, and then he interrupts it. I don't know. It seemed a little bit on the dickish side from Ambrose. But also, how fragile is Maryse to not understand what the Miz means and does not mean to do? You know, like, is she that fragile of a wife to not understand that Dean Ambrose is causing all of this? You know, like, Miz isn't intentionally treating her like garbage, like a heel sometimes does to the female partner. You know, he is not trying to do any of that. So I don't know. Just some maybe it's just my my own brain. I don't know. But really nice promo, by the way. Probably the best yet, with Brock and Joe each doing sit down interviews. Really good. I figured they would do this. I want more. Maybe them doing a Stone Cold versus The Rock back in for WrestleMania 17, when they both sat down and had Jim Ross moderate the interview with the two. Something like to that effect, or even have Jim Ross do it. I think that would be awesome. I think both of them having to sit and calmly talk to one another, it could get real. And I think that would be very, very effective, because these two don't look like wrestlers playing wrestlers. They look like legitimate badasses, because guess what? They are. They aren't playing a character. They're being themselves, and my God, what a revelation when that happens. All right, so SmackDown Live opens with Charlotte, Becky, Tamina, and Natalya outside Daniel Bryan's door arguing over Sunday night's match. Daniel Bryan says to calm down. He wants to hear from Carmella and Ellsworth first, both of whom open the show. Carmella addresses the elephant in the room that she needed James Ellsworth to win the Money in the Bank. And to that she says, who cares? She's been overlooked and underestimated since she was the last draft pick, and says that while everyone else was worried about making history, she was making plans for her future and won the match fair and square. Can't really argue with that, folks. True. It's true. As I said earlier, why is it about making history and not winning? So thank you, Carmella. It's about winning. Stop trying to speak over winning and be more worried about this is the first. We're the first. How about you win the effing match? Okay, I'm just going to stop. Carmella points out that Kane interfered in 2014 and Bray interfered in 2015. But here's the thing. They didn't actually grab the briefcase. That's the difference. She calls everyone pathetic for tweeting at Daniel Bryan. She is Miss Money in the Bank. There's nothing anyone can do about it. I really enjoy the promo by Carmella here. Might have been her best to date. She's had some good ones against Nikki Bella, but this is where she returned to her form. And I think this is her niche. And I think James Ellsworth, while at first was very awkward, is kind of fitting in nicely with Carmella. You know, I thought it was just kind of be a one-off and it just kind of a joke of a team, but this is working, and I think WWE is squeezing more juice out of this than I think they ever thought they could. So that's a good thing. Big E versus Jimmy Uso. Tom Phillips says after Big E did the hip swivel, by the way, You say what you want about his antics. Big E is all business, but he just did the hip swivel. Is New Day really all about business? Tom, what? Yeah. Okay, anyway, Big E wins clean with the big ending. And Lana then challenges Naomi to a rematch next week. And Naomi agrees. Yeah, so Naomi is just handing out title opportunities. Doesn't matter who you are. Doesn't matter if you've ever had a match in WWE before. Just hand them out. You know what that does? Yeah, she's a fighting champion. You can say, oh, babyfaces should be fighting champions. Yeah, but not for people who have never had matches in WWE before. You need to have respect for the championship. That's what who the victim is in this. The victim and the casualty in all of this. And as much as I love Lana, she just hasn't been proven in the ring yet. The women's championship is the victim because the championship should be reserved for men or women who have earned it and have shown that they have the ability to be champion. And Lana has, done neither. I love Lana, but I don't know. It's just, I think it is devaluing the championship in general when that happens, when you just, yeah, I want a championship match. Okay, I'll prove it to you next week, and you'll feel the glow. I am not a Naomi fan, by the way, as far as her babyface character. She is arrogant at times. She's got that kind of, kind of gangster talk that I don't like. I'm going to snatch you and feel the glow. Like, really? And her laughing a couple of weeks ago at Lana, who wanted a championship match, was extremely heelish. She's obnoxious. I don't like Naomi as a babyface. I think, yeah, she's great marketability with all of her glow garbage and her message of the glow is believing in yourself. Really? Is that what this is about? Is this a be a star? She's a walking billboard for be a star. What is this? It's almost as stomach-churning as Bayley's message that she is here to just hug people, basically, and make sure that the little girls have someone to look up to. This is such a corporately influenced, corporate image influenced roster. It's sickening. Stop trying to look like you're such a hug us, look at how great we are company with all of these great marketable, how family friendly, soft characters. And I don't mean SAWFT, I mean SOFT, soft, no backbone type of characters. Bayley, your Exhibit A. I know Naomi's a fighting champion, but sometimes I don't understand why she is such a... She's heelish. She is. All right, hey, let's move along here. I need to stop these rants. I get very passionate about it. And I love WWE. I'm not here to bash WWE. This is not a bash WWE podcast ever. I'm a fan. The only time I ever rant is when I want to see the product improve. This is not an F this product. Oh, this is such a bad segment. Oh, I hate WWE. I don't know why. What are they doing? This is so bad. Some people call into shows. It's like, well, stop watching the damn show. You never hear any... You know, there's some people that just never find anything good with the product. Never. I do. Okay? But when I call a spade, that's what I do with this company. And that's what I do with wrestling. And I've been watching this since 1997. 20 years. Many of you be like, oh, I watch it for 25. I watch it for 30. It's great. It's great. Some of you may be only watching it for 5 years. You may be a new fan. But when you have come through the Attitude Era and the Ruthless Aggression Era and then the Reality Era and now the Roman Reigns Era, whatever the hell you're labeling this as right now, it's hard to stomach some of this stuff that is just so corporately influenced that makes you want to vomit, and Stephanie McMahon going out and doing all these be a star and philanthropy is the future of this business, and we're Susan G. Komen and we are Connor's Cure and we are just the best, aren't we the best? Oh my gosh, look at how soft and sweet and cuddly we are. We are such a family-friendly product. It makes me want to vomit. I understand we aren't going back to blood and middle fingers and, you know, swearing and cussing. Everybody's promo has a swear word. I understand that. But you need characters that are believable. You need characters that I can relate to and that have a backbone, especially if they're booked as a babyface. I don't need characters that are just here to hug. And I'm not here to inflict pain on anybody. Bayley, I am officially and I can't believe I'm saying this, I am officially a non-fan of the Bayley character. She is dead to me in my book. Do I dislike her as a person? No, I'm not stupid. I know what kind of person she is, and I know, or okay, I'm not friends with her, but I understand, you know, that she's not really who her character probably is 100%, and she probably isn't coming up with all of the garbage that WWE is shoving into her brain to regurgitate in her promos. I get that. I'm talking from a character perspective. In the ring, she's fine. She's good inside the ring. I'm talking about character. I'm going to boo the shit out of Bayley's character from here on out because until she otherwise shows me that she has some fire and some backbone and can actually stand up for herself and tell me that she's not just here to hand out hugs and make sure everybody sings Kumbaya and, ooh, I hope I didn't hurt you, but I want your belt, but I don't want to hurt you. Are you freaking kidding me? Are you kidding me? All right, but I am going to take a breath here. All right. Let's move along. I'm going to try to keep it on a low tone, but that kind of stuff really, really just gets under my skin when it's just so transparently corporate image. And just this is a WWE brand. All right, before I start swearing, I'm going to continue. All right, we have a sit-down interview with Randy Orton. This was really, really good. It was talking about how this is now personal, and he's going to hurt Jinder Mahal bad. He's going to rain RKOs down on his entire family in India. That made me pop. That was an LOL. Jinder made a mistake, and there's no turning back. There was fire. There was conviction. There was a sense of urgency and anger inside Randy Orton that I haven't seen in years. I loved it. I'm giving Randy Orton props for actually giving a damn about his promos with Jinder and try to put Jinder over. I love it. I think Randy's finally, since his return a year and a half ago from injury, is really kind of coming back to his Viper, true Viper self. So, bravo. Dolph versus Shinsuke. Chain wrestling to start. I like that. But then the WWE of punch, kick, you I beat down on you, then you beat down on me, takes over quick, but that's just today's wrestling. I think that this may have been Shinsuke's best match to date in WWE, at least on the main roster one-on-one. Shinsuke wins with the Kinshasa, and it looks like, you know, it's time for Shinsuke to move on to his next opponent. Given that he beat Ziggler twice clean, it's time. I'm fine. I'm cool with it. Becky confronts Daniel Bryan backstage. An emotional conversation, saying no matter how hard she works, she knows someone is going to cut in front of her. And Daniel Bryan says it's complicated. Becky then says that is doing the right thing that complicated? This was a very, very good promo from Becky Lynch. Even, it wasn't really a promo. It felt like a conversation. It felt like it didn't feel like her character speaking. That's what made it great. This felt like Becky speaking to Daniel Bryan like there were no cameras on her. That's when it feels authentic. I liked it. There was fire. There was anger. It felt real. So that was very good by Becky Lynch. Kevin Owens for the U.S. title. Open challenge. AJ answers the challenge, but Kevin Owens reminds him that it has to be for a Dayton, Ohio local resident. Chad Gable comes out and says he just moved to Dayton this morning. AJ says to ring the bell and the match is on. Apparently, AJ can now have the authority to do that. But nonetheless, Kevin Owens wins fairly quick with a pop-up powerbomb, and we move along. Daniel Bryan addresses the Women's Money in the Bank ladder match. So he says that while there has been interference in past Money in the Bank ladder matches, nobody has ever climbed the ladder and handed the briefcase to someone else. Thank you. Case in point. Decides to strip Carmella of the briefcase and make a rematch for next week. So I guess this is, as I said, I don't know if this is WWE going back on their Money in the Bank booking, doing a mulligan by almost making a joke of the women's division. I don't know. But I'm surprised Daniel Bryan on SmackDown didn't bam James Ellsworth from ringside. But apparently he did on Talking Smack, so thank God. I mean, that would have just made him look really, really stupid. But to be honest with you, and I heard this too on another podcast, that what if they just did the same finish next week? Could you imagine the backlash and anger? If WWE had the balls to do it, I would do it and see the reaction. Could you imagine if they did the exact same finish? Anyway, Jinder Mahal versus Luke Harper. And this is another little bit of a nitpick I have that many people maybe overlook, don't care. To me, I do because I want to believe. How are the Singh brothers not selling the beatdown from Randy Orton on Sunday? It was 2 days prior to SmackDown Live. It was the same with Heyman a week ago on Raw. I mean, how bad did he beat up the Singh brothers? He destroyed them. RKOs through tables. Suplexes on the outside of the ring. I mean, a neck brace, partially taped up, something, limping, anything. But we get nothing. Same with Paul Heyman, who's not even a trained performer. No neck brace, even a soft neck brace. Just wear it for a week. Just a week. Sell the moves. I mean, somebody gets beat down that bad, you're not just walking out like you just rolled out of bed Sunday morning. I mean, I don't know. Those kinds of things, like, it's detail that is overlooked that takes me out of the moment sometimes. Anyway, so let's see here. Corbin comes out, teases cashing in. But I think Corbin's going to be a long-term holder here. I really do. Until we get a babyface champion, I think that Corbin's going to be a long-term briefcase holder. Jinder Mahal beats Harper with the Colossus after the Singh brothers' distraction. Nobody has ever kicked out of the Colossus. As I said, I like that. Orton's music hits and takes out the Singh brothers and beats down Mahal. Goes for an RKO, but the Singh brothers get it instead. I like how they build to hitting the finish on the heel. It means something. It makes you want to see it, right? So that's a good thing when they don't always blow off the heat and make the crowd happy by hitting a finish on a heel. It's a good thing. I like how he has cronies to take that for him. So that's a good thing. All right, let's get to Monday Night Raw, and then we'll wrap this thing up, folks, as I'm shuffling through my papers. So Roman Reigns opens the show, and as Cole likes to label it, or WWE likes to label it, a thunderous reaction. You know what? In the interest of not doing too many rants on this show, you guys know how I feel about that corporate jargon of a failed babyface, but he gets a loud reaction. It's thunderous. Yeah, okay, but he's not getting the reaction that you cast him as, so it's a failure. All right. Anyway, by the way, where the hell is David Otunga? I'm really growing tired of Booker's nonsensical raspy voice on Monday nights. I really am. And you guys can call me out on this. I know I am not a fan of David Otunga. I think at times he sounds just too blasé and very unenthusiastic about things that are going, oh, he just got hit with a chair. That's what he'll do. Anything to win. That's literally how he speaks in his tone. But David has slowly improved, and I would take David Otunga over Booker any day. I can't listen to his nonsensical, just comments that make no sense type of, and the problem is also his voice quality. It's not his fault. It's just how his voice sounds. It's distracting, and it doesn't add. It takes away from the broadcast. Corey Graves, I love Corey Graves right now. He's doing an awesome job in the booth. I think he could easily be Cole's replacement when he leaves. By the way, we now get to see Roman doing the Superman punch anytime we want with his new shirt. Yay. All right. So he says that some of us may not like this, some of us may love this, but he cannot be beaten one-on-one. He reminds us of the people he's beaten, and he's main evented WrestleMania 3 years in a row, and how he retired The Undertaker, and he claims he is the number one contender for the Universal Championship for the winner of Great Balls of Fire. And he says, you want to know why? Because this is my yard. He makes the rules around here. You can't tell me this is not a heel promo. You just can't. You can't mention beating The Undertaker and being the guy to retire The Undertaker, which we don't know if that's official yet, without expecting boos. I mean, so, I don't know. It's just such a conundrum that they have on their hands here. I just don't understand what redeeming qualities this guy has. This, to me, was the most heel promo to date, or at least maybe they just let him loose a little bit more and let his real persona shine through. Maybe that's what this was. I don't know. But nonetheless, Joe comes out and says that out of the long list of names of people he's beaten, he noticed his name was not on that list, and that he's the true number one contender and the next Universal Champion. Reigns said he'll never be a Samoa Joe to him, just Joe. Joe headbutts him and tries to apply the Coquina Clutch, but it's blocked. And my God, he hits a Superman punch. Yeah. The name of that move and the overuse of that move is it's cringeworthy. But don't worry, all you little kids and women. He still looks good. He looks like the poster boy for WWE. I just don't understand the redeeming qualities. He comes out, he acts like he's the toughest guy in the room, like he could steal your girlfriend. Like, he's got an arrogance about him. He never looks happy. He looks like some days he looks like he'd rather be anywhere else but there. I just don't understand. Okay, he's got the look. Does he put on good matches? Yes. And JBL's deal of, well, you know, they boo him, but everybody cheers by the end of his match. Bullshit. That is garbage, okay? I think that is total farcical nonsense. A guy that comes out and then puts on a good match with another guy, I'm not going to just suddenly cheer him because he puts on a good match. There is 90% of his 90% of his reaction is based on his promos, how he acts. He puts on good matches, yes. But you think that's enough for me to go, I'm going to cheer this guy? You're kidding, right? You're kidding. He puts on good matches. He's a hell of an athlete. No question about it. Not even arguable. He has improved in the ring. Yes, 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 as Daniel Bryan would say to all of that. From a physical standpoint, great. He puts on good matches and blah, blah, blah. But his persona and his facials and his outside of WWE comments on podcasts, they all scream arrogant a-hole. They all scream just douchebag. I'm sorry, they do. I don't understand the redeeming qualities of this man. If I'd love to talk to a Roman Reigns fan and ask them, how and why are you cheering for this guy beyond who the conditioner he uses in his hair makes him look just so sexy? Or the kids that like him. Why do you like him? Because he has a name, a move in his arsenal called the Superman Punch. And, ooh, I know who Superman is. This guy's like Superman to me. Are you freaking kidding me? I'd love to talk to a Roman Reigns fan and ask them, why do you cheer him? Now, do I think they should fire him? Hell no. I think Roman is in my top five of guys to be on a draft if I were going to be on a team and the coach of that team. I would draft him in the top five. Hell of an athlete, great look, yeah, yeah, yeah. All the stuff that Vince McMahon was incensed by, or incensed, I should say, attracted to. There's another word I can't think of. But all of those are all true, and he's a good athlete, and I think if he's let loose on the mic, I think the problem is he's going to come across as a heel, as he did Monday night. So anyway, let's move along. As I always say, let's move along. Elias Sampson in tuning his guitar. That was funny. I know people don't like this. I kind of like Elias Sampson. I think that his guitar gimmick is it's new. I know if you watch NXT, it's not. But to the mainstream audience, it is. And Finn Balor interrupts as Elias slowly walks out of the ring. So Finn versus Bo Dallas was actually the match. And Dallas was very aggressive at the beginning of the matchup. Finn inevitably turns things around, and Finn Balor then beats Bo decisively. Kurt is on the phone backstage when Corey Graves says he wished he had a good Father's Day, but he knows he didn't because he got the same text. So the mystery continues. Big Cass and Enzo interrupt, and Angle promises them by the end of the night, we're going to find out who did this. Seth announces himself as the cover athlete of 2K18. He then goes on Mr. Inspirational until Bray interrupts and they have a verbal exchange that leads to Bray making his way to the ring, and Seth jumps off the top rope and lands on Bray as he walks up the ramp. He cut his face on something, by the way. Seth was bleeding on the side of his face, but he's all good. So Finn is attacked backstage during an interview with Elias Sampson, or by Elias Sampson. So Finn and Elias, looks like it's a official program. Miz interrupts Bo and Curtis and offers them to join him. I said at the time I would like it if they did. It would give Miz lackeys to do his dirty work and Bo and Axel something to do of significance to be involved with. And it would give Maryse time off for make room for Maria and Mike Kanellis to actually take over as the couple on TV. So I like it. I know that's on SmackDown, but still, I would like it. And obviously they do, as we saw. So we get Samoa Joe, or as Roman Reigns would say, Joe versus Reigns. Samoa Joe wins with the Coquina Clutch after an ambulance is shown backstage, backing into the arena as Braun Strowman blasts open the doors. Really positive reaction for Strowman's return. I have to say, it's good to have him back. I don't think anybody predicted where he would be right now last year. So if you go back a year, you can't tell me you expected Braun Strowman to be where he is, or the reaction to be what it is. Strowman then comes down to the ring and says he isn't finished with Roman Reigns yet, and at Great Balls of Fire, he wants him in an ambulance match. He throws Reigns down, but I expect him a little bit more of a powerful return from Strowman. I mean, I understand he can't completely destroy him if he wants a match with him, but maybe a little bit of something more. It was just like one slam and then he leaves. But I liked it. Good return, powerful return, and I think that these two could have another very good match at Great Balls of Fire, which would be their third pay-per-view match, if I'm not not mistaken. All right, let's get to the next segment here. Sasha Banks versus Nia Jax. This turned into just kind of a mess with Alexa, Emma, Mickey, Dana. Bayley then comes down and gets in the mix as all the baby faces stand tall. I didn't know who to cheer for, who was against who was doing what. I didn't get it. And as I heard on a PW Torch podcast earlier this week, it was kind of like, it was a good point that, you know, the agents or the creative team or Vince said, "Oh crap, we forgot to book the women. Let's just throw everybody out there quick just so we don't forget them." Like, that's how it felt. They were almost afterthoughts. Just kind of everybody get out there quick. So, you know, we didn't forget you. You guys are going out in a segment that means nothing. So Kurt Angle then addresses the Enzo and Cass attackers. After Enzo and Cass come out, Kurt bring out the Revival and the Big Show, all the suspects. Show calls Enzo and Cass soft. Security footage from Corey Graves reveals Cass to be the attacker. Graves is in a lot of stories, isn't he? Boy. Nice heel promo from Cass, and then he kicks Enzo in the head. They learn from Roman Reigns' ascension, I think, by turning Cass heel, by the way, before turning him into a babyface. Imagine that. You have a heel, and you have time for the crowd to dislike the character before they embrace him. Imagine that. Imagine the missteps that WWE has learned from the Roman Reigns debacle the last 3 years. So, guys, that is my review. Hope you enjoyed it. Again, WWEpodcast.com, where you can check out all of my stuff. And as I said, in the next 1 to 2 days, it will be completely revamped. And maybe right now. I don't know. But 1 to 2 days is the time frame I'm looking at. It's going to be new. It's going to be fresh, sleek, cool, I hope. Feedback and it would be appreciated. So go to Twitter and go to the WWE Podcast, where if you want to follow me there. It's the_WWE_podcast if you would like to contact me there and DM me and feedback or just reply to me. I don't care. Whatever you want to do. But guys, thank you for joining me. I'll be back next week. And I'm also going to be probably simulcasting on another website. But that announcement will come if it happens. So, all right, guys, until then, take care. I'll talk to you next time.